from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll get a preview of the Indianapolis City Ballet's Evening with the Stars.
I'll find out how the Irwin Library at Butler is celebrating its 50th anniversary.
And I'll learn about the Sanctuary Art Space in Martinsville. Plus, there'll be our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Indianapolis City Ballet brings some of the world's top ballet dancers to Indianapolis each year for a one-night extravaganza called Evening with the Stars. Travis DiNicola spoke with the ballet's Kevin Hess and Ellie Baker about their event.
Ellie, Kevin, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Always great to see you guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Travis.
It wouldn't be summer unless we did this, right? This is the fifth year for the City Ballet, and what an incredible event it is to sort of wrap up the summer, if you will. Kevin, I'm going to have you, if you will, just for the listeners who may not be familiar with sort of what the Indianapolis City Ballet is and the concept behind it, give us sort of a brief overview of that.
The Indianapolis City Ballet has, again, we started 5 years ago. We're trying to reintroduce ballet. We're trying to reengage an audience, and we're trying to just put on exciting and accessible programs that hopefully resonate with the public. And we're very pleased. We're very pleased to be here. Thank you.
Well, the centerpiece of what the Indianapolis City Ballet does is the annual Evening with the Stars. And this year it's on September 7th, again at the Murat Theater at the Old National Center. And this is, I mean, I've sort of described it as like the sampler of the best ballet from literally all, not just all over the country, but all over the world. Tell me about this concept of bringing together different dancers from different companies.
It's an old-time ballet concept that mm-hmm. has sort of gone away. Individual companies, the great companies of the world, do their annual gala programs, but it's all dancers within their own company. It's sort of gone away, the impresario sort of produced gala that really brings the best dancers and the best new and classical dance to a single stage in a single night. And we're very pleased. We have a great audience here in Indianapolis that has really embraced it. So it has life. It's something that we're very pleased to.
One thing, I mean, you know, when I first started going to Evening with the Stars, you know, I was so excited to see on the same stage dancers from American Ballet Theater as well as the New York City Ballet, Joffrey. I mean, incredible, you know, ballets that we often don't get a chance to see here in Indianapolis. And here you see some of the best, but also a lot of international dancers. I know this year you've got some dancers from San Francisco Ballet, but also Berlin, Boston, a couple places. Some of those are new?
Yes, Stuttgart and Oslo.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Again, we're constantly looking for the best dancers doing the very classical repertoire, but also there's some really exciting new works coming out, new choreography, and you find a lot of that in Europe. And so it's fun to bring these groups together.
How do you do that? I mean, you, Kevin, I mean, as the director and producer, I mean, how do you find these dancers and pick and choose and convince them to come here?
A lot of travel and a lot of begging.
Uh-huh.
It's a difficult, but it's a fun process to go through. I attend a lot of performances all over the place.
Sure.
Always looking. And it's a small, ballet's a very small world.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very spread out. So everybody knows everybody, so there are always connections. There's always someone you know who knows mm-hmm. that person. So it's really great. We've really made an impact in Indianapolis in the international dance world. I actually think we're better known outside of Indianapolis than we are inside.
Really? I mean, are you getting a sense that dancers now are starting to recognize, oh, Indianapolis City Ballet, you know, I heard about that last year. I'd love to be a part of that.
Or They talk about it within the dance world. I mean, you talk to somebody at the Bolshoi and they know,
because mm-hmm.
they know one of their friends has been here. And it's a good crowd and it's a fun city and it's... nobody knows what to expect when they're coming here, but now all of a sudden Indianapolis is sort of a hub of what we're doing. And I think our Young Stars program from 2011, the WFYI broadcasting, is part of that. I mean, we really got a lot of notice from that, and it'll be going national later this year.
Yeah, and that's a very exciting thing, too. And I want to get back to that in just a moment, because that's a big part of what you do. And I think, I mean, especially the impact that you have on dance education here within the city and young dancers is phenomenal. I mean, giving them an opportunity to see some of the best of the best. But one thing I remember, I believe when we were talking last year about it, that you were telling me, and I certainly saw when I got to go to sort of the party afterwards and seeing the dancers with each other, a lot of these dancers, they know of each other's work, but don't necessarily get to see each other perform all the time. And so, I mean, they're kind of each other's biggest fan. I mean, you really got a sense of that, you know, here were these different dancers from all over the world that were so excited to see each other and were, you know, cheering each other on and so glad to meet each other. I mean, there's a real interesting camaraderie that exists with this production.
Well, there is. I think you have to realize that the life of a dancer is one where you begin in your early teens. As I said, it's a very small world. It's a very competitive, very intense, very requires great determination and appreciation, too.
Mm-hmm.
So they see each other every once in a while, but it's a very small club of the greatest dancers. And they do run into each other every few years on a stage somewhere. And now it's Indianapolis.
Well, and again, I mean, audiences here really benefit from being able to see such a great sampler. But as we just said, the education part is a very significant component for all of you, I know. Tell me a bit more about the Young Dancers Program, the Masterclass, and how Indianapolis City Ballet is really sort of having that impact throughout the whole year.
We created the Masterclass series as just a way of using the connections, the network we have of people. And there are a great number of teachers. It's funny, we put on a Masterclass program. It's about once a month. We go to different studios around the city. We try and distribute that so we get all the various geographic aspects of the city. And it's really interesting because it's become a destination nationally. We have people flying in from New York to take the masterclass. It's an audition for companies and schools.
Oh, that's great.
It's turned into something that even we didn't quite expect. But it's a great outreach program for the community. And the Young Stars program, again, is that same sort of thing, giving opportunities to be seen and to interact with other dancers of other schools across the area. It's unusual because you get to be compared the best of this school with the best of that school.
Right.
It's a measurement of where you are as a student, and it builds a community. It starts to.
It does. It pushes everyone a little bit, and everyone gets better from it. So the Young Stars. I mean, so in 2011, there was the Evening with the Stars was sort of the second night of a two-night billing, if you will. And the first night really featured these younger, up-and-coming dancers. And as you mentioned, there was actually a documentary created by WFYI about that, which has been really exciting because it's just gotten some great attention as well. Tell me a bit about that.
We were nominated for an Emmy, thanks to WFYI. Some brilliant editing.
It's pretty cool.
And we put on a good show. I think it's really interesting just to show the various levels. It features dancers from age 12 to age 20.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a few of the major stars in it, including Daniil Simkin and Michelle Wiles and such. And it's really the life of a young dancer is what I think it is, but it's shown mostly through performance, and it's gotten great notices, and we're very pleased.
Well, it's a great project. Let's jump ahead to the night, the Evening with the Stars, and if you will, just tell me about a couple of the dancers. What can people expect this year? Because I know every year, you know, people in the dance community here in town, the arts community, always get very excited when you guys release the names of who are the artists you've booked, and so who do you got this year?
Well, very pleased. It's a mix, as you know, of classical and contemporary ballet.
Mm-hmm.
On the classical side, we're really pleased to have Alicia Amatrain and Jason Riley coming back from Stuttgart. They do a piece called Mona Lisa that they did on our first gala, and they'll do that again. It shocked people with how contemporary ballet can be.
Mm-hmm.
They'll do that performance again.
Stunning work, yeah.
And they'll also do John Cranko's Onegin, a beautiful lyrical, gorgeous,
much more
classical piece.
Yeah.
So you'll really see the range of those two extraordinary dancers. Yuan Yuan Tan and Damian Smith from San Francisco. This is Damian's last year as a dancer. He'll be retiring at age 39 or something.
Wow.
Back problems. And it's the nature of a dance career.
Of course.
A farewell performance for him.
But a great opportunity to see him.
They've been a number of times. Mm-hmm. Gillian Murphy from American Ballet Theatre, a huge star. We finally got her back from, she's living in New Zealand. And she happens to be here then, so luck worked in our favor. She's in a major motion picture now coming out, Giselle.
Oh, wow.
We'll be in U.S. theaters in September.
Great. That's nice timing.
Okay. So, yeah. Just by accident.
Very cool.
We've Boston, mm-hmm. Norwegian Ballet, Berlin Ballet. We're bringing back Misha and Elisa, principal dancers from Berlin. It's going to be a great show.
It'll be absolutely a great night. Very exciting work. Ellie, I want to make sure you have a chance to tell us how we can get tickets, how we can go. What do people need to know if they don't want to miss this event of the year?
Absolutely. We have tickets on various levels. There are the patron levels that would be available, starting at $250, which gets you reserved parking in the front of the theater and invitation to the post-performance reception. And those can be purchased through our website at www.indianapoliscityballet.org. If you want general reserve seating, those tickets start at $35, and they are $35, $50, and $75. And those are available through Ticketmaster, www.ticketmaster.com, or by calling 800-745-3000. Or if you're in town and you want the best possible rate on your Ticketmaster fees, stop in at the box office at 502 North New Jersey.
I will let people know, you know, that if you're going to end up sitting in the balcony, you might be sitting with an awful lot of, as they call them, bunheads, a lot of the young dancers from all over town that just fill your balcony to see this show. But they're always a lot of fun. I mean, they're up there just cheering, and it's very exciting.
It's quite a different atmosphere, isn't it? It's a party.
It really is. It really is. Hey, briefly tell me just a little bit more about the masterclass series that's being offered. I know there's quite a number of different events that have been scheduled from now throughout the year, and these are for certainly more intermediate and advanced students. But you've got, in fact, with Gillian Murphy from American Ballet Theatre, I know, is doing one of them the day after the Evening with the Stars, and then from there it's just a great schedule.
Our masterclass series is we're very fortunate to have it sponsored by Penny and Jock Fortune. It runs from September through June with the dance school year.
Mm-hmm.
It includes major international dance stars, and it's wonderful to see them interact with the young people because, again, they demonstrate enormous jumps. They're wonderful turns. You got Paloma Herrera, Tyler Peck, Gillian Murphy, Herman Cornejo, and then some of the great teachers and former dancers, school directors. As I was saying, it's become an audition point.
Sure.
For a lot of dancers.
You know what also is great about this is that it's located with so physically located at so many different locations at different dance studios. I mean, whether it's at Butler or Central Indiana Academy of Dance, Indy Dance Academy, the Curtain Call Studio, Village Dance Studio, and there's many others as well, Performer's Edge. It's great. Gregory Hancock. I mean, so you're kind of all over the place too, which is a great way to connect with those different companies and those students.
We're trying to build a rebuild. I don't know that it existed before, a community of dance. I mean,
yeah.
We want the dancers of one school to know the dancers of another school. We don't want the schools competing for students. We want them
working together.
I mean, so to see students from one school going to the performance of another is building a dance community here, and it's happening.
Absolutely.
It's really great.
Well, this is very exciting. Kevin, Ellie, thank you so much for coming in again. I mean, it's always a delight. I know you're awfully busy this time of year getting ready for what will be the fifth Evening with the Stars, and I appreciate your time.
We'd love to see
you.
We hope
so
to see
much.
You there.
Travis DiNicola with the Indianapolis City Ballet's Kevin Hess and Ellie Baker. The Evening with the Stars performance takes place on Saturday, September 7th at the Murat Theater at Old National Center. Tickets are on sale at the Murat Theater box office or by visiting Ticketmaster.com. For more information about the ballet, you can visit IndianapolisCityBallet.org. Again, IndianapolisCityBallet.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Irwin Library may be a bit noisier than usual on Monday, September 9th from 2 to 4 p.m. as Butler University celebrates the 50th anniversary of the day the library opened. You're invited to visit this landmark designed by Minoru Yamasaki, who also designed the World Trade Center and many other masterpieces. There will be cake, Billboard's Top 100 Hits of 1963, and guests are encouraged to wear vintage 60s attire. Sharon Gamble invited Butler University's Dean of Libraries, Julie Miller, in to tell us more.
So, Julie, take me back to the first time you saw Irwin Library. Was it when you came to campus to interview for your current job, or had you seen it before?
No, I came to campus to interview for my current job, and I was surprised by this building that looked very different from any other building on campus.
Sure.
And that was Irwin Library.
I went to Butler, and I remember the first time I saw Irwin Library. And if in the event, dear listeners, that you've never been on Butler's campus, Butler is chock full of very traditional college campus architecture. The campus established around 1930 in its current location is full of lovely Gothic buildings, very, you know, ivy-covered halls of learning-esque. And then there's Irwin Library.
Right, which has been described in a variety of ways over the years as a wedding cake.
I could see that.
A multi-layer, gleaming white wedding cake, as a riverboat with its sort of frills, well, not exactly frills, arches, I guess, over three stories. And, you know, one of the really interesting things about Irwin Library is when you step inside into the atrium, which is three levels high, with a skylight at the top, and you're in front of a fountain.
Mm-hmm.
Not known, libraries are not known for water features. And so I was really surprised by that, and quickly learned that the library has sort of two factions of people, who love the fountain and people who don't. But I have come to love the fountain, to my surprise, because it provides a level of white noise in what is otherwise a very open floor plan to the building. And once you're accustomed to it, you really don't hear the water anymore. And the atrium itself is just such a beautiful area of the library that I think it's a little spot of tranquility.
The people who don't like the fountain, what's their primary problem with it?
I think it's they either find it too noisy, and those are people who maybe come and go and don't spend a lot of time in that area, or they're concerned about the humidity in the building, and temperature and humidity are something we don't have a whole lot of control over in Irwin Library, in, given our current systems.
Sure.
So
I don't know if it's still this way. I admit to not having been in the Irwin Library for a few years, but the rare books room used to be about as far away from the fountain and the sunlight as humanly possible. Is that still the case?
It's on the third floor, so up at the top. And in a number of areas of the library, we have shades, and the reading room for the special collections and rare books and archives area is one of those areas where we have blinds that we pull so that in the afternoon sun we don't get any damage to materials that might be housed there.
Sure.
We also have UV film covering all of those windows around the library so that we minimize impact on people and on our collections.
Has that always been there? Was that part of the original design, or was that something where a librarian way back said, Mr. Yamasaki, you're a wonderful architect. You didn't think about the effect on the books of all that, of all those windows.
The windows were made with a glass that was intended, it was called LustreGuard or something like that, but it was intended to minimize the heat impact. And but I think that it was deemed insufficient over time. And so I think it was my predecessor, Lewis Miller, who was the dean before I arrived, who got the UV film installed all around.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it helps with both temperature and the UV rays penetrating. And you know, if you have a red carpet that's in direct sunlight, it turns not
pink.
So red anymore. The same thing happens to our books and other materials and furniture and all of those things. So we try and protect those.
Sure. That makes great sense. Is there anyone in my undergraduate and graduate school days, there was one professor, now retired. If you look up absent-minded professor, you will see this person's photo, and he regularly fell into that fountain because he used to read while walking. Is there anyone in modern day doing that? Do you have any accidents ever?
We have more intentional dips into the fountain. But I do know of one story, and that was when President Bobby Fong was there at an event. I understand his wife took a step back and took a dip into the fountain. And it's a little bit deeper than it looks.
It is, yeah.
So we now put some furniture and some plants in planters strategically placed around the fountain to just be, you know, sort of a visual cue to don't take another step or you might get a little wet.
There's something here. Heads up. Pay attention. So how long have you been the Dean of Libraries at Butler?
Just over 1 year.
Okay. And where were you before?
I was at Eastern Washington University, just outside of Spokane, Washington, where I was associate dean for 6 years.
That was a change?
Yes, it was a change, but I'm a native of Ohio.
Ah. So you didn't have to learn to be a Midwesterner.
It felt very comfortable and familiar to come to Indianapolis. I hadn't spent time in Indianapolis before. And my husband and I are really enjoying getting to know the city.
Good. What is it like in a digital age being dean of college libraries? What worries you most about the changes you see coming over the next few years?
Well, it is exciting times in academic libraries, and you can imagine that. The digital age has had quite an impact on academic libraries because we're in a process of redefining ourselves. I think largely in the past, academic libraries have been defined by their physical collections.
Mm-hmm.
And as we all have more and more access to alternative information sources, we still have many of the traditional sources, journals, books, but they may be in a non-traditional format. That is, they're delivered electronically. And so because of that, our physical collections are becoming not used the way that they have been in the past, and more redundant, in fact, because we might have a lot of our journals available through a product called JSTOR, which stands for Journal Storage.
Hmm.
The back files are available full text electronically. And so we're in the process, along with other academic libraries in Indiana, of really assessing our collections and trying to ascertain the vital physical collections that we need to keep, and perhaps reducing the physical footprint of the collections in the building and repurposing those spaces in ways that make sense for our students and our faculty.
For example?
Well, we actually have many fewer study spaces in Irwin Library now than we did when it opened in 1963. And so we have some pictures taken the first year Irwin Library opened. And you can see that the spaces were very balanced between physical collections and study spaces. So I think of that as the once and future Irwin Library, because over time the physical collections have crowded out some of those spaces, and we want to reclaim them. The library as a third place remains very important, particularly for undergraduate students. It's the place where they get down to work. And they like having some of those physical collections around them as a reminder, even if they're not using them directly.
Even if they're sitting there on their laptop, right?
Correct. but they like having the library as that go-to place when it's noisy in the residence halls or in the fraternity and sorority houses. They can go to a place where they can study. But study has also changed. And so as students do more and more project-based work where they're really collaborating with each other, they also need collaborative spaces. And the library actually has renovated one area of the main floor to be a collaborative space for students. And it's very popular. Most of the furniture there is mobile, so students can move things around, and we have whiteboards and tables and single seats and all kinds of different configurations for them to make it their own.
Is there still, I'm kind of reading between, sorry, library expression, reading between the lines of what you just said. It feels like, regardless of the fact that current undergraduates were essentially born with computers and digital devices in hand, but there's still a sense of library is a place where you change your attitude when you open the door and walk through. You're in a different mental space. You're in a different intellectual space now.
I think that that's true. And at Irwin Library, of course, we also have the Science Library,
right,
which is in the Holcomb building,
right,
as well. And it's interesting, both of those spaces have a skylight at the center. I definitely think that Irwin Library was designed with the idea that libraries need to be a special place on campus, and the building itself should speak that to you when you step through the door.
The building's roof is open-minded.
Yes, it is. In fact, I think it was intended to be a little bit more open-minded. That is, I've been reading some of the press releases and coverage about the building when it opened.
Uh-huh.
And the architect, Minoru Yamasaki, was quoted as saying he wanted people to experience a shock of awe when they stepped into the atrium and saw blue sky overhead.
Mm.
The current skylight doesn't allow you to see the blue of the sky, but it is a very bright and welcoming space, and I think that it's intended for you to say, oh, I do something different here than I do when I walk into Starbucks or when I step into my residence hall room. It's a place where reflection can happen, but also where connection can happen.
Sharon Gamble with Julie Miller, Dean of Libraries for Butler University. Irwin Library's 50th anniversary party is Monday, September 9th from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Irwin Library, of course. Learn more at butler.edu.
All right, I have lemonade.
Uh-huh.
I have watermelon.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. What am I missing? I need some corn
on the
cob.
Charcoal.
Charcoal, mm-hmm. Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, dear listeners, why don't you bring the rest of the dishes and join us for that potluck we call What'll We Do?
There you go.
For Labor Day weekend.
That's right. We got to have a picnic, right?
We got to have a picnic last and a cookout.
Is it the last official weekend of summer? I mean, I guess not technically.
Psychologically, yeah.
Feels that way.
Yeah.
Stuff,
school's been back forever.
I know, really. So, well, I know one thing that I'm planning on doing this weekend, and that is figuring out my schedule for Jazz Fest, because Jazz Fest this year, which is running from September 12th through the 21st, is, as they say, all around town. And it features over a dozen different concerts, all at different venues. This is really kind of fun this year. Everything from the Jazz Kitchen to the IMA Terrace to the new Schrott Center at Butler, Madam Walker Theater, Landmark Center, Apparatus Building. There are concerts all over the place, and there isn't one pass for all of it, so you have to sort of mix and match and pick and choose. Right now, Diane Shore has sold out. Everything else is still available, and there is going to be some great stuff. Eddie Palmieri at IMA Terrace, some great, great, just great piano work. Alan Toussaint at the Schrott Center. Some really fun stuff. So I'm
Sully kind of, Wallerab Jazz Orchestra's coming back together, I think.
Yes, Basili Wab, they are going to be performing their Birth of Cool arrangement, Miles Davis' Birth of Cool album.
Yay.
And that's part of a doubleheader with APA piano competition semifinalist Zach Lapidus and his trio, and that's at Landmark Center on the 16th. So, I mean, concerts every night, sometimes multiple concerts on the same night. I'm going to go figure out my schedule. That's what I'm doing on Labor Day.
I'm seeing extra traffic on the Indie Jazz Fest website, as well as on the Online Maps website, as people figure out, oh, no, wait a minute, I've never been to a concert at the Apparatus Building, which is actually
a
neighbor of WFYI. Exactly right.
So IndieJazzFest.net is their website, and you can get all your information there.
Fantastic. A little bit less planning. A warm fest is this weekend throughout Broad Ripple with music, food, and so much more.
That's right. And that's going to be a great show. And that's going on Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Yep.
So new festival to come to town. Hey, something, I can't stop talking about jazz, apparently. but the Farelli Markowitz Jazz Quartet is as part of Jazz Fest, is doing a special gig in Speedway. This is really kind of fun. It's going to be on September 14th, and they're doing at the Dallara Indy Car Factory, which is the place where you've got Lino's, which is that neat little sort of Italian espresso bar, and they're going to be performing from 7 to 9. There's going to be wine tasting and craft beer, and they're also doing some stuff outside. They're blocking off that main street there in Speedway in front of Lino's in the Dallara factory, and it should be just a really, really cool party. I know they're really excited about this. Apparently, Mark Dallara of the Dallara Cars is a huge jazz fan, and that's why he's bringing jazz to Speedway, and Gene Markowitz, of course, is just a great drummer, and that should be a really fun concert.
It all makes sense now.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, the Indianapolis Society for Classical Guitar is having a kickoff concert on Thursday, September 5th. And it's free for Indianapolis Society of Classical Guitar, which happily goes by an acronym because that's a mouthful, ISCG. Free for ISCG members, $10 for everybody else. It's kind of a sneak preview of the season with a concert featuring friends and members of ISCG. And it includes guitarists like Guido Sanchez Portugues, Jordan Knudsen, and John Alvarado, and as they say, many, many more. You can find out more by Googling ISCG or Indianapolis Society of Classical Guitar.
Cool.
Yes, something to tempt you away from all that jazz.
let's go in a totally different direction. That
would
be Beef and Board's Dinner Theater.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, and they are doing Father of the Bride. That just opened up. It's running through September 29th. Of course, most of us know the great movie with Steve Martin, and this is just a very, very fun musical version of that is taking place through September up at Beef and Board's Dinner Theater.
Hey, before we're all together again, there will be...
Did you know that, by the way, that September is now the month where most people get married, more so than June?
I know that because I work at Indiana Landmarks, and our offices are in Indiana Landmarks Center, and our event director said the other day, because somebody was saying something about June weddings, and he said, not anymore. It's fall weddings. September and October's getting,
October,
to speak,
but,
hot.
So maybe
as
something
well.
Fun to do with your wedding party, you know, for a shower or what have you, is go and take your group to see Father
to
of the
see
Bride.
See Father of the Bride. I love that. Even if you're not getting married, it's a fun show to see. I'm just saying. First Friday is coming up. And there's, of course, things going on all over in the usual places. But at Gallery 924, that's at the Arts Council of Indianapolis, 924 North Pennsylvania, there's a show called Unblocked, and it features the work of Butler University Fine Arts Professor Gautam Rao, who used to work, do figural work. And he has launched himself on a journey rediscovering the creative process through pattern and color and, believe it or not, mathematics. Woohoo! Just saying. First Friday coming up September 6th, so you might want to put Gallery 924 and Unblocked on your to-do list.
Hey, something else you might want to put on your to-do list if you want to go to the TEDx Indianapolis, which is taking place October 22nd at the Hilbert Circle Theater. Get your tickets now because they are going fast. It is a TEDx day. There are tons and tons of speakers, actually more than 20, featuring both internationally and nationally known speakers as well as some local speakers, including Tasha Jones, who's the poet and educator of the Hello Beautiful movement. Also Chad Priest, who's an Air Force veteran and CEO of the Mesh Coalition. Kristen Wright, who works with Exodus Refugee and also does some writing for Nuvo, and a whole bunch of other, again, speakers that day. But you need to get your tickets now if you want to get them because it is selling out. You can go to TEDxIndianapolis.com for more information. That's TED and then the letter XIndianapolis.com.
I have a couple of fests if you're like, oh, okay, Fringe Fest is over and Dig In, the Festival of Food and Beverage is over. I need another fest.
You need a fest?
You need a fest.
How about what do you got?
If you haven't, if you're not making plans for Jazz Fest and you're not going to Warm Fest, the Arts and Cultural Council of Decatur County's Moon Tree Music Festival is September 7th from 4 to 11. It's at High Point Orchard in Greensburg, just a short drive away. It's going to have live music, local wine, and craft beer. And you can Google Moon Tree Music Fest Greensburg on Facebook. Well, I guess you can't Google it on Facebook. You can search on Facebook. Sorry about that. And find out more. And also the White River Park Festival is actually a month-long series of events, but jumps off with a community fun day and a 5K fun run on Saturday, September 7th. Again, more information online about that as well.
There you go. And then Irish Fest starts on the 12th this
year. That's right.
Yeah, so that's coming up soon as well.
Soon it'll be Thanksgiving Fest and Hanukkah Fest and Christmas Fest. Well, but we'll get to that when we get to that.
We'll get to that when we get to that. Hey, one other thing that I want to mention, if you haven't checked it out already, Hoosier Salon's 89th annual exhibition, Art and the Human Soul, is going on through the end of September at the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana History Center. It is free with admission there, and it is just a beautiful exhibit of work featuring Indiana artists.
Fantastic. I have one more festival, although festival isn't part of its official title. It's Quest for the West. It's an art show and sale at the Idlejord, and it takes place the weekend of September 6th through the 8th at the Idlejord Museum. More than 50 of the world's most celebrated artists will exhibit and sell prize paintings, and you can meet the artists, and of course there'll be food and music and educational opportunities, and as they say,
much more. Well, Sharon, have a great Labor Day, and we'll be back next week with more on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
The Art Sanctuary in Martinsville is a space created by artists for artists with studios, galleries, and workshop areas. This September 13th, their annual juried show, Artesian, will take place again. Travis DiNicola found out more from artists Ellen Wilson-Pruitt and Nancy Maxwell.
Ellen, Nancy, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you both here.
Thank you.
So I know that this sanctuary in Martinsville has actually been around a little while now, but I'm really curious to hear a lot more about it because you've been doing some neat things down there. Ellen, let's start with you. Tell me a little bit about what this is and how it got started.
The Art Sanctuary, we're going on our fifth year. We'll see our fifth year in February.
That's excellent.
2014.
Yeah.
And it's a it was formerly a Methodist church, which has been repurposed, and the sanctuary itself has been converted into a gallery, and the remaining part of the building is artist studios. So we have roughly about 20 different artist studios in the building, and various arts mm-hmm. are representative there. And we have shows in the gallery, and the space is also rented for events and get-togethers and so forth. And we really look at ourselves as being a driving force in the arts community in Martinsville.
Of course.
Up until that point, there really wasn't something of that type in the area. And
sounds like you're really the hub of the arts
right,
community
exactly.
in Martinsville.
We
yeah.
like to think of ourselves as that. And since we have been engaged, there have been other artists that have taken studios downtown, and we really were now part of the cultural trail, the Hendricks County mm-hmm. Cultural Trail, and they invited us to be part of that, so we're getting a name for ourselves, we hope.
That's very cool. Now, you have been a part of it since almost the beginning, right? You were
Nancy
one of the first
and I both have.
Artists mm-hmm. to be get in there. What was the inspiration for this? Nancy?
We are fortunate to have a gentleman who owns our building, Ron mm-hmm. Stanhouse, who is sort of just turned on by a downtown redevelopment. He's very active in the Bloomington Arts District, sits on several boards down there. And he saw an opportunity in Martinsville for developing the downtown, and the way to develop the downtown is through the arts. So through his purchase of the building and subsequently inviting artists to rent mm-hmm. studio space there. We have grown, and as Ellen said, we've had several other artists spin off, outgrow their spaces at Art Sanctuary, and move on to different buildings around the square. The whole idea is that to revitalize your downtown,
sure.
you've got to bring arts and culture back downtown.
Absolutely.
And we were a little bit poor in that regard.
Now, we're going to be talking about the Artesian show coming up in just which is in September. We'll be talking about that in just a minute. But are there regular openings? I mean, as far as gallery space open to the public, things like that for people to see and do?
Yes, the second Friday of the month mm-hmm. from 6 to 9 p.m. we have open studio night. So
okay.
when we have shows, gallery shows, we open them that second Friday night. And then the artist studios are open, so people come and they can tour the show that's in the gallery and tour the studios and visit with the artists. And we have a lot of people that are return customers. And then those that come for the first time, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
As long as we've been there, I will always ask when someone comes in the studio, I'll say, is this your first visit to the Art Sanctuary? And
sure.
they say, yes, we didn't know it was here. and that's mm-hmm. always, if we can get one person each second Friday that's new and can be introduced to us, I feel like we're really being successful.
Well, 5 years is a pretty good run. So, obviously, the sanctuary is successful, and having the studios rented out is keeping it going and making it worthwhile to do. But from your perspective as artists, how important is it to you to have a space that you're also, you're in proximity to other artists as well as being able to reach the public?
It is very enjoyable, and also I think improves your craft to be in a building with other artists, to be in a facility where you can go down the hall and get a critique or just have common interests, common frustrations.
Mm-hmm.
As our programming grows, we try to encourage artists who don't have studio space there by having a monthly critique. We have a couple of other, we do a model drawing session on occasion. We rent wall space for artists who maybe have their studio at home but would like to mm-hmm. have some public exposure for mm-hmm. their artwork. About half or two-thirds of our monthly shows are ones that we set up. We also invite, you know, an outside art group. Other year we have the Indiana Wildlife Artists do their, they do three regional exhibits, and we're the central Indiana location for them, and there are a few other shows like that. So we are growing, you know, in popularity and in numbers, and we also are looking to the future with different kinds of programming that helps, just helps, you know, for me it's great to be working on a painting and get to a point where I'm either, you know, kind of stuck or just needing a break, and go down the hall and see what someone else is working on and talk it over with them.
Absolutely. And Ellen, how about you?
Well, particularly for me, I'm a porcelain artist, so a lot of people are not familiar with the art. So it gives a chance to showcase the art and introduce people. And I have a lot of people that come into my studio have never seen china painting or never seen it in anything other than just decorating dishes.
Sure.
And it gives me a great opportunity to use that as a forum to spread the word about this art and actually really introduce the public to it more than any other form that I might have.
Yeah, that's a really interesting art form. One that I just started learning more about last spring when there was the porcelain conference.
Yeah, well, I was here.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember, yeah, there we go. That's it all comes back, and that was great. So, so that makes a certain amount of sense. And Nancy, what type of art do you do?
I'm primarily a landscape painter. I came out of a career at teaching art in public school. I'm very active in the Indiana Plein Air Painters and like to start a lot of my work outside, but I'm also a studio painter, so very traditional work.
So tell me about the Artisan Show, which is coming up. I believe this is the, third year, fourth year?
This is the fourth.
Fourth year.
Fourth year.
Mm-hmm. And so this is a juried competition?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is our big show, if you will. Mm-hmm. It's a juried competition to get in. We try and have, we do showcase the work of artists from all across the state. Judge this year.
So not just limited to artists who have their studios.
Right, it's open to anyone over 18. Yeah. Our shows are never limited to people who have studios in the building, and they're always open. But this is the one that, you know, you have to be juried in to get your piece hung on the wall, and we have a great deal of wonderful art. No charge for the public to come look, and we've got a judge this year that is strong in painting and graphic design and photography. So William Kent Hopper, he's a professor at Huntington College, and we're excited about having him come judge the show. He is not an artist that knows the well-known painters in the state, and primarily our art show ends up being painting. But it's great to have a professor who's, you know, who has the skill to judge but doesn't know names and faces very well.
Right.
That makes it a very exciting show to put on.
Yeah, really focused on the artwork.
And it's a 2D, 3D show and photography. So it pretty much affords any artist in Indiana the opportunity to get a juried show in their credentials.
Now, when does the actual show take place?
The turn-in is this Saturday, August 24th, unless they make special arrangements, and we're willing to do that if someone can't make the turn-in day.
And I'm going to cut that out because this show airs after that.
Oh, right, right.
So we're going to go back to...
When is the show?
Right. So that's all right.
Okay. The show
Hold on.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And we're back in 3, 2, 1. And so when would the show be?
The show will open the second Friday in September with our regular monthly second Friday open house. That's the 13th, I believe.
Yep, the 13th.
6 to 9 p.m. And we'll announce our winners at that point. It's usually a very nice reception, and all the studios are open so people can come and enjoy a nice evening out.
Excellent, excellent. And again, what are the prizes for the... artists? I mean, of course, bragging rights. But.
Right. Bragging rights. We flex a little bit because if we have enough photography this time, we may spin that off into a separate prize category. Mm-hmm. Generally, we give a best of show and a first, second, and third, depending on the judge and what they choose. Sometimes they pick three or four that are sort of the judges pick that they'd like to take home with them, and we put some different awards out there for those. I mean, then we always have a people's choice or
a
popular
cash prizes.
Yeah, it's always cash prizes. So
excellent. Mm-hmm. Great. Mm-hmm. So now, if someone is listening to this right now and trying to think, okay, where in Martinsville is this, or how do I get there? What's the best directions if you're heading there?
head south like you're heading Bloomington. And it's the Art Sanctuary is at 190 North Sycamore. It's actually just one block north of the downtown square.
Okay.
So, and what's great now is you can pretty much ask anyone in town where the Art Sanctuary is, and they can direct you. So,
excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Good. Very good. Well, it sounds like you guys are doing a lot of great work down there and really bringing some great culture to Martinsville. And congratulations on that. And looking forward to seeing the Artesian Show. Oh, one thing before I let you go. Tell me again why, because I know we talked about this before we went on the air, but why is it called the Artesian Show?
The city of Martinsville was known for its mineral water, much like French Lick and West Baden.
Mm-hmm.
And at the turn of the century, the town was filled with what they called sanitariums, people that would come to take the waters. So the local high school there, their mascot is the Artesian, and that's why it's called the Artesian Show.
Not artisan.
No.
Okay. Very good.
Well, artisans are welcome, but artisans as well.
Very good. Very good. Well, thank you both so much for coming into Art of the Matter.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with artists Ellen Wilson Pruitt and Nancy Maxwell from the Art Sanctuary in Martinsville. For more information about their September 13th juried show called Artesian, visit artsanctuaryindiana.com. artsanctuaryindiana.com. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. when we take a look at the new book celebrating Indiana plein air painting.
I'll find out about a new documentary film being shown at the Idol Drawer.
And I'll get a preview of the Actors Theater of Indiana's new season. Plus, there'll be our arts counter we call.
What'll we do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.